Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for joining us again here on Planet Porky in the heat wave. Well, look, it's a heat wave around the world. We hope that we're going to be able to cool you down for the next 45 minutes here on Planet Porky with myself, Porkmeister, and, of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Miss Leslie Ann Jones. Miss Jones, how are we today?
Yeah, pretty cool, actually. Cool. It's fine as long as you stay inside,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, this is historic. We are recording this literally on the hottest day ever recorded in our country since records began. So that's quite something, isn't it?
It's a worry because all the climate change deniers are obviously in the wrong. We know that climate change leads to more and more extreme weather conditions. Heat waves are fast becoming the new normal. Mm. And the levels of planet warming that we're witnessing right now, the greenhouse gases are what's caused this. Mm. Because our use of things like oil and coal and gas, which has all rocketed over the past 100 years, if you think about
yeah.
it. You know, the worst thing we've done to the planet really is the motor car. And we're all driving cars. We're all using petrol. Yeah. We're all polluting the air and so on. If we don't stop, the planet will continue to heat up. Mm. And it's all very well, these people rushing to the beach and saying, this is glorious and I just care about my tan. But, you know, the planet will be done for and there won't be anything left. So think about it, folks, is all I would say.
Well, I think that's a bit simplistic. I'm not a climate change denier. I just like to question how much of the climate change is down to man, i.e. human beings, and how much is down to meteorological science. You know, I believe in sunspots. Sunspots are the sort of shades, the glasses that appear around the sun about every 200 years, which stop the rays from burning intensely onto Earth. It takes a sun ray 8 minutes to get from the sun to the Earth. And if they pass through the sunspots are like shades and they cool it down. But we've gone out of sunspot range now and that's why it's heating. I mean, look, I'll ask you again, Miss Jones, what is the explanation for the fact that the Romans had vineyards alongside Hadrian's Wall? We know that because archaeologists have found the remains of the vineyards. They found grapes and they found olives and all that kind of stuff. Well, that was happening in 400 AD. And it's been much colder since then. We had a mini ice age between 1300 and 1700. I would say a lot of it is cyclical.
Well, they didn't have motor cars in the days of the Romans. They didn't have all the technology yeah. that we have and use today. To the best of my knowledge, they weren't digging up coal either.
Yeah, well,
or using oil.
Yeah, but they didn't have them in the 1600s when they used to light bonfires on the frozen River Thames because the ice was 3 feet thick and you could actually light bonfires on the Thames and have parties there on Christmas Day. Anyway, look, it's an imperfect science, as we all know. The point is at the moment it's very hot. I had a really unfortunate experience of working just 2 days ago. I had to get to a studio in Paddington. Now, they'll send a car for you, but I hate being in a car. And it takes like an hour and a half from Surrey to get to Paddington. And it doesn't matter what you do with the air conditioning in cars in this country. It doesn't work. The car gets very hot. Open the windows, hot air comes in. So I always say, no, it's not a problem. You know, I can get to a station, I can get onto an air-conditioned train, I can get to central London, and then I can get probably a tube, 3 stops, and I'm there. Problem is, the train was cancelled, so you've got an immediate problem there. Then I got to London Bridge, and they were 12 deep trying to get onto the tube train at London Bridge. The district line had closed down, there was backlogs everywhere. I gave up. I was going to have to ring the studio and say, look, I ain't going to make this. I'm going home. I came out of London Bridge underground. Unfortunately, there's a taxi rank there. So I got into a black cab and I got a black cab over to Paddington, 60 quid.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
And took an hour, but it was the only way I could get to work. So I hate traveling in the heat. As we're recording now, I've got a job in the morning and luckily I've got a car coming, but it's not a terribly early one. It's sort of mid-morning, so it should be okay. But nevertheless, it's very, very uncomfortable. When I was in that situation in the underground, I could feel the strength ebbing out of my body. It was very hot and I thought, I'm not going to make this. I'm not even going to make it out of the tube station. I don't think I can even make it back to the escalators, right? And, of course, I've realised that I should be much more careful about myself in heat because literally only one-third of my heart works. And that means that I was watching Dr. What's-His-Name on GMB this morning, you know, and he said what your body's doing all the time is to try and get the heat out of your body. And that does that through perspiration and all that, but it puts a terrible strain on your heart. You know, when you're hot, your heart has to work harder to get the heat out of your body. And, of course, as my heart is very imperfect, and I got to that stage where I was feeling dizzy and I was getting flashing lights in my eyes and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So I do.
Well, you need to be bloody careful.
Exactly. I've got to be very careful because I could actually faint in the heat. You know what I mean? So that's why I've got to wear big, wide brimmed hats and that kind of stuff. But look, I'm only moaning about myself. Generally speaking, I want everybody to enjoy the sunshine. We don't get a lot of it in this country, probably only 10 or 12 days a year when you can go off to the beach and all that kind of stuff. And that's great for people who have beachside businesses like, you know, ice cream stalls and cafes, and they hire out deck chairs and all that kind of stuff. So I want everybody to enjoy it. But at the same time, not to be, as you've quite rightly said, unaware of the fact that when that's happening, the earth is burning up. I mean, on those days, you know, I don't believe totally in you know, the climate change theory. But on those days, grass turns green. We don't get any water. There's no rain. We could suffer drought. And so I'm not a big fan of sunshine, as you know, and I just think we have to be very aware of adjusting our lifestyle when these things happen.
Well, sure, and I've had three bouts of skin cancer surgery
as well.
And all of that dates back to childhood when we were yet unaware of the fact that we were getting cancer because of sun damage. We didn't know that in those days, but we know better now.
Yeah.
So one thing I really hate to see is a brown, sunburnt child.
Oh, yes, I agree.
I just think you people put some bloody cream on them, put a hat on them. Keep them in the shade. Mm.
We used to go to your favourite country, North Wales, okay? And we used to go to a place called Prestatyn and Frith Beach, which was next to it, and it was glorious. They were dune beaches, you know what I mean? And you could have a little picnic, you know, one side of the dunes, they run over the dunes with all the grass in it and then run down onto the beach. It was glorious. But our mums, you know, myself and my two little sisters, we were probably 6, 7 and 8 at the time, we just ran around on the beach all day, and I was struck down by terrible sunburn because I had ginger hair and fair skin, and I never remember once my mum ever putting sun cream on me or anything. She'd just say, oh, you'll be all right. And she had something called camomile lotion. And
calamine.
And the next day she just rubbed this on my sunburn. So, oh, don't worry, I'll be better in a minute. But she was never sort of preventive in trying to, you know, make sure I didn't get sunburn. It didn't seem to worry her.
Well, first of all, sun creams didn't exist back then. So we used to put baby oil on ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember my back used to peel like cling film in great sort of sheets of skin coming off. Yeah. And my siblings used to peel it off. It makes me feel sick now to remember.
Yeah.
But we know better nowadays and there's no excuse.
That's right. When we got to about 15 or 16, so that's like a generation before your time, somebody discovered this very exotic sun cream when we all started going to Mallorca and Spain. I forgot what it's called now, but it was, you know, it was in a beautiful plastic bottle, yellow and brown. And if you didn't have one of these, you weren't on the inside. And that was the first time I ever remember sun cream. And
was that Amber Soler?
Very much indeed, Miss Jones. It certainly was. And the adverts used to show people on the beach, Amber Soler, looking like sort of teak coloured, you know what I mean? It was the thing that, you know, this safely makes you brown, you know what I mean? All that kind of.
Oh, do you remember George Hamilton with the mahogany tan?
Yes, I do.
As well?
Yes.
And a tan was a kind of status symbol in those days.
Yeah, it was. Look,
it was, I don't have to work. I can lie in my garden or on the beach all day and look like this. Yeah. Or I've been to Ibiza or the south of France or somewhere else equally exotic, Mexico.
Exactly.
But nowadays, I would say, isn't there an element of cultural appropriation to trying to darken one's skin?
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right, yeah. But anyway, there we are. So anyway, Miss Jones, you've been very busy. Last night you and I did a Stones book launch. I enjoyed it enormously. It was over in, where was it? In not Richmond.
That was in Chiswick at the George the Fourth. What a lovely pub that
is. Fantastic. It was great. And it was a great room at the back we had. It was very airy, actually, considering it was so hot. It was nicely air-conditioned and all that. I did enjoy it. And I have to say, Miss Jones, you're in your element. When you're on stage and your interlocutor is asking you about your subject, on this case of Stones, believe me, it's fabulous to watch you go, because there's not a thing about your subject you don't know. And I felt very proud to be sitting there in the audience and be associated with you professionally, Miss Jones. Well done.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Mr. Parry. Yeah. I think, you know, when you immerse yourself in a subject like the Rolling Stones or John Lennon, whatever it is, for a couple of years, you have no excuse but to know your material.
Yep.
And also to have in mind the range of questions that you might be asked.
Yeah.
And also the kind of thing the audience is going to want to ask you as well.
Yeah.
So you carry that all around and it becomes part of you for the duration of that book, really.
Well,
and then the sad thing about it is you almost have to forget it all so that you can move on to the next book with an empty head and start all over again.
That's right. Does that mean there's another book on the way, Miss Jones?
Always another book.
Always another book on the way. That's great. Well, listen, I want to ask you about something else you've been doing lately with Roger Daltrey. But before that, I want to make an announcement, okay? And the announcement is that to celebrate your book, I'm going to re-release the record I recorded with the Rolling Clones a few years back. I'm not sure how many years back now, but I think it's about, don't know, about 10, I think. And I made a version of Paint It Black, okay? And I did it with a Rolling Stones tribute band called the Rolling Clones. I think we talked a couple of podcasts ago about the lead singer Mick Jagger, who's more like Mick Jagger than Mick Jagger. And we did it in a studio in, I don't even know where it was now, somewhere like Twickenham or somewhere like that, you know? And I remember we had a big 4x4 to take us over there. No, a people carrier and all that. And Mr. Brazil came with us, and just as we turned the corner into the road where the studio was, there was a Majestic wine store on the side. And Al said, "Stop, stop, if I'm getting involved in this, I'm going to need some refreshment." And he got out, and two cases of Pinot Grigio carted into the back of the car, and they lasted us all day. It took about 10 hours to record it, but it turned out to be very good. It was released as a record, and it got to somewhere in the 60s in the pop chart. I definitely got into the pop chart, okay?
This is amazing. How come I don't know about this?
Well, the strange thing was, I was thinking the other night, I thought, what do I know about the Stones that I can talk to Miss Jones about? And I thought, oh, hang on, Paint It Black. So what I've done is, right, we made a VHS of it, you know, a video, and we sent out thousands. And also it went out in CD version, as audio, obviously, but it got into the charts. And believe it or not, I went and dug out the video, the VHS, and I've sent that to a company in Yorkshire who convert VHS into digital. Do you see what I mean? So when they've done that, and it'll be before the end of this week, and when I get it back, I will then offer to our millions of listeners and to my followers and yours on social media, I'll offer them a link, and if they click on the link, they'll be able to watch the whole video for nothing.
We've got to get this back into the charts. This is a no-brainer.
Absolutely. If we can, we certainly will. But I thought about, well, I suppose I could go to somebody and say, look, put this into a stream and let's charge 85p for it or something. But I honestly can't be that materialistic about it. I just want people to see it, listen to it, watch it, and for them to remind themselves of your book, The Stone Age.
Well, that's very kind.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. But, you know, these things have a habit of working their way into the charts accidentally, so you
Excellent.
Never know.
Excellent.
You might be top of the charts this time next month.
It'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? There we go. Now, Miss Jones, briefly, still on the rock and roll circuit. You've been with Roger Daltrey lately. Can I just tell you, I met Roger Daltrey once at one of these. Do you know, every year on a sort of a Thursday, all the traders in London give away their profits for the day and give it to some massive charity, you know what I mean? And all these stars go into this huge tower in Canary Wharf and they take over the trading floor and they have to pretend to be traders and any profits they make go to charity. And loads of people have done it. I remember doing it with Sir Alex Ferguson. I've done it with the little Ronnie of the two Ronnies, sadly not with us any longer. But I also
Ronnie Corbett,
thank you very much. But also I did it with a very glamorous woman. I can't remember which one it was. It was like Chrissy Hynde, I think, you know, or something like that. But I also did it with Roger Daltrey. And the first thing that struck me about him, and I don't mean this as criticism whatsoever, but Roger Daltrey's shorter than me.
He's quite small, but he's perfectly formed. He's nearly 80.
Good God, I didn't realise that.
Oh, yeah, he lost his way for a little while. His voice was not up to scratch a few years ago when I saw him at the Albert Hall.
Wow.
But I tell you what, he's damn well got it back. Yeah. And he absolutely floored the place last night. This was at the London Palladium. Yeah. It was the final night of a UK tour. Mm-hmm. And he explained, he was on the stage just telling us why he did the tour. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, I don't need the money. I've done very well in my life. I've got everything I need. Yeah. I've got fantastic family, grandchildren, all the rest. His grandkids were there, actually.
Yeah.
And he said, I did this tour because all these guys, he said, indicating all the musicians on stage,
yeah,
and all the crew backstage, because of the pandemic, they lost 2 years of work.
Right.
And the entertainment industry, the music industry, is very slow to come back.
Mm.
And all those guys hadn't had a gig.
Mm.
So he put together the tour not to earn money for himself,
yeah,
but so that all of those guys could get back in the driving seat, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is absolutely fantastic. Again, on a previous Planet Porky podcast, we referred to the fact that he was paid a lot of money to play in a band with Richard Desmond, the former newspaper proprietor and now sort of mega property developer. They called it the RD Crusaders, the Crusader being the emblem of the Daily Express newspaper that Mr. Desmond owned. And, of course, RD was both Roger Daltrey and Richard Desmond. And Mr. Desmond played on the drums. He was a very keen amateur drummer. And I met him at one of those concerts as well. But anyway, there we go. I'm delighted.
So what was that for? What was that occasion?
It was something to... Mr. Desmond is Jewish, and I think it was to raise money for a Jewish charity, you know, for children or something like that or whatever. But everybody got invited along and off we went. So there we are. Now then, Miss Jones, I have to say my heart was broken just a couple of days ago. Rory McIlroy failed three holes from home to win the Open at St Andrews, the holy grail of golf. And I felt so sorry for him. He led all the way and then fell away at the end. That must be so heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah, it's just golf. Come on. I mean, he played pretty well, didn't he? And then I loved what he said at the end. He said, the putter just went a little cold
today.
Yes,
I know.
Which is such a great line, because golf, like cricket, it's a metaphor for life, isn't
yeah
it? I mean, also it's worth remembering that Jack Nicklaus finished second in more majors than he ever won.
That's right, he did, yeah.
So, you know, it's that frail,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
He's had a very good year.
Yeah.
The crowd love him. Mm. He's super rich. He's got a nice life. I don't think we need to worry about him
too much.
Well,
he said himself, he said, it's not life and death. He was very pragmatic about it, you know, but obviously disappointed having got so close but so far away. But there he goes. Somebody come up behind him, the young Australian, Chris, you know, I don't even know his name.
Whoever he is, yeah.
That's right. And
be someone else next to
him. That's right. He came roaring up behind him for, I think, five consecutive birdies, which means he gained a stroke on each hole and just overtook Rory just like that. But I don't know, that's life. Now, Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown married on this day in, I don't know, 1996 or something like that. That was quite an explosive marriage, wasn't it?
92 was, yeah.
Well done.
It was the worst thing she ever did. Poor Whitney. This guy, I mean, he's kind of revered around the world for his... He invented this style of music, a genre called jack swing.
Yeah.
Which is a blend of R&B and hip-hop.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've got to really know about it to know the difference, or to be able to hear the difference.
Definitely.
I mean, he got her hooked on drugs. I remember her saying that he laced a spliff, marijuana, with cocaine.
Right.
And he gave it to her, and he got her addicted very quickly.
Yeah.
And God, she died.
Terrible. That's a terrible story. Yeah. I mean,
she died.
He should have been charged for that, shouldn't he?
Well, of course. Worse than that. She died in 2012.
Yeah.
And then their daughter, Bobby Christina, she also died. Both mother and daughter, weirdly, died in a bathtub.
Yeah.
Which is very strange. You know, he did contribute to her death. I think there's no question
Absolutely.
Of that.
Absolutely.
But he's never paid for that. Mm. He got married to his manager after that, a lady called Alicia Etheridge. And he's got seven children. Yeah. He's still got a career. He's still alive.
Yeah.
His beautiful wife, who contributed some of the most memorable music to our musical history.
Yes.
You know, Whitney Houston, you still hear her on the radio every week.
All the time.
And it's the saddest story.
Famous Robin Hood song, didn't she?
That was The Bodyguard, wasn't it?
The Bodyguard, yeah, that's right.
I think Kevin Costner came out this week, I read somewhere, that he was talking about Whitney Houston was the love of his life.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think they were romantically linked, were they?
Well, obviously they were.
Oh, well, blimey, there you go.
It's a lovely film, by the way. I don't suppose you've watched it because it's a big romantic.
No, I haven't
film,
actually. No, I haven't, no. But anyway, there we are. I was delighted to see that Dame Joanna Lumley was made a dame this week. I love Joanna Lumley. I think she's brilliant, so British, you know, and so upper class and all that kind of stuff. However, although I'm a huge fan of absolutely fabulous, the real star of that to me wasn't Joanna Lumley, although she was a major character, but it was, who was the woman who wrote it and also played opposite her? You know,
Jennifer Saunders.
Thank you very much indeed, Jennifer Saunders, who I think is a genius. Not only did she write it, but she was the main character, and she was so, you know, she was playing, wasn't she? You know, the dippy PR queen and expose the.
Well, she was Lynn Franks,
yes,
wasn't she?
Right,
you remember Lynn Franks,
and, yes.
And she was sending up Lynn Franks.
That's right, yeah.
And then there was a girl I'm sure you remember from Fleet Street, Sandy Williams.
Yes.
And the character Joanna Lumley played in Ab Fab was Sandy Williams.
Is that right? Golly.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, so clever. But the kids get sick. I mean, you've probably seen Joanna Lumley's travelogue programmes that she does.
Yes, I have, yeah.
When she swans off in different parts of the world. And I always sit there doing an impersonation of her, and the kids go, oh, God,
yeah.
Not again.
Yeah, right.
Because it all sort of gets all sort of breathy.
Yes, that's right,
really.
Yeah.
And I have this approach, you see, where I dress in mismatched garments and statement shoes, and I waft around saying absolutely pointless things so as not to challenge anybody.
Yeah, golly, that's brilliant. That was a brilliant impersonation, Miss Jones. Well done. You've got a new career.
Oh, thank you.
New career ahead of you. Listen, I'll tell you something else. Just get back to showbiz for a minute. I saw that Linda Ronstadt is 76, you know, and I thought, you know what? I don't know enough about Linda Ronstadt. I know she was a singer. And then I suddenly discover that her backing group, a few like guitarists and a drummer, broke away and became the Eagles. I mean, that's amazing.
It's a well-known story, isn't it? She gave
That's
a bunch
right.
of session musicians a break.
Yeah.
So these guys were her band.
Yeah.
They used to rehearse in a shed. And she recruited Don Henley and Glenn Frey into her own band in 1971.
Yeah.
And then Randy Meisner and Bernie Leadon joined a bit later. They formed the Eagles.
Yeah.
And they signed their own record deal that same year, 71 it was. And then Joe Walsh and Don Felder came later. There were various lineup changes down
who was the
years.
But Don? It was Don Lee, wasn't it?
Don Henley,
Oh, Don Henley, yeah.
Yeah.
Because a friend of yours and mine, Martin, he was editor of the New York Daily News, Martin.
Martin Dunn.
Thank you very much. Started off as a reporter with me in this country. He was on The Sun and I was on The Express. Ended up becoming the editor of a newspaper here, which has now become extinct. Rupert Murdoch started it, and then it went again. Was it called Today or something?
Today newspaper, yeah.
But then Martin went and suddenly became such a powerful print journalist in America, editor of the New York Daily News. But
went to the Boston Globe first.
He did, you're absolutely right. Boston Globe first, and then New York Daily News. No, he didn't. He went to the Boston Herald. It was the
Herald,
because that was the Murdoch title. And
oh well, it's all in Boston.
Yeah, it's all in Boston. Yeah, I like Boston. Great.
Yeah, I like Boston.
Yeah. But anyway, sorry. Point of my story is he's over in California with another couple of mates. I think one of them might have been Stuart Higgins. I'm not sure,
Higgy the human sponge.
Human sponge, that's him, yeah. And they were playing golf on a course outside Los Angeles, and there were three of them. And a bloke wandered up, and, you know, he'd just come out of the clubhouse, and they were on about the second hole or something like that. And he said, "Hi, guys." He said, "I see there's only three of you." And they said, "Yeah." He said, "You mind if I join, make it a foursome?" And they said, "No, fine, you know, that'll be good, because then we can play as pairs, you know, that's great." So they got another couple of holes, and Martin says to this guy, "So what business are you in?" He says, "Oh, I'm in a music business, you know." He said, "Oh, right, okay, very good. What do? You play?" "Yeah, I play, sing a bit, you know, write a few tunes." "Oh, okay." He said, "You guys from London?" And they said, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, I've done London. I did the Roundhouse, I think it was, in London." "Oh, great, okay, yeah. What exactly do you do?" "I'm in a band." "Okay."
What nobody thought at this point to ask his name, of course.
No. He said, "I'm in a band." And they said, "Oh, what's it called?" He said, "The Eagles." And it was Don Henley.
Oh, it was Don Henley, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's one of the great singing drummers,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. I don't know how you can sing and drum at the same time. The amount of energy you've got to expend when you're drumming. I don't know if you've got any oxygen left in your lungs to sing, but, you know, he sang one of the greatest songs of all time, didn't he? Hotel California.
I don't know how any musician plays any instrument and sings at the same time. I look on in awe to this day. Yeah. I still don't get how they do it. Go on, name me 10 Eagles hits.
Oh, Hotel California. Life in the Fast Lane.
Yes.
The third one is Lion Eyes. Okay.
Yeah.
You can hide those lion eyes.
Brilliant song. Susie Quattro did that live on stage at the Albert Hall recently.
Right.
She did it beautifully. Yeah. Oh, no, she did Desperado, right, which is another one of my favourites.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Okay. And they're about the only ones I can name, actually.
What about, I mean, they're such indelible hits, these.
Yes.
One of These Nights.
One of These Nights, of course, yeah.
A New Kid in Town.
Another Kid in Town, yeah. Blimey.
New Kid in Town. What about Take It Easy? That's a great driving song, isn't it?
Easy. I think I might go out and get the Eagles' Greatest Hits now that you've
The one to get, the one you must get, is Greatest Hits 71 to 75.
Right.
And it's got all those great songs like Tequila Sunrise, Take It to the Limit, okay, all those kind of
Just
ones on it.
Take it to the limit, yeah, one more time.
One more time.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we shouldn't sing, really, should we?
Well, I should. I think I've got a singing voice, as you'll see when you listen to my version of Paint It Black.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Right, okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for listening to Life on Planet Porky. As you're listening to it, it is either just or just has been the hottest day of the year. So I hope that Miss Gent and I are managing to cool you down a bit, because it's not going to last by Friday of this week. That's 2 or 3 days' time. It's going to be raining, so I'm looking forward to a bit of relief there. But there we
desperately
are.
Need some rain. I tell you one thing, people here in London should just go and get on the Lizzie line, the Elizabeth line,
really?
And just go round and round town on that, because the air conditioning is magnificent.
Is it? Right. Oh, well,
yeah.
Thanks for reminding me of that. I'll think about that. Now, summer, of course, means that people go around in flip-flops. I've been warning for years, literally years, flip-flops are the most dangerous form of footwear, if not clothing, you can possibly wear. Your foot is attached to a slab of rubber by what you can only call a thong, a little, you know, strip of rubber which goes between your big toe and your toe next to it. It's the most out-of-control piece of clothing you've ever had. And lo and behold, I've been warning for years, a report comes out today which says that flip-flops are responsible for 200,000 accidents in the last 12 months. And that does not surprise me. I've heard reports of people dying by literally slipping off cliffs because they're walking along a cliff top and it's greasy and woof. They've got these slides called flip-flops on their feet. They just disappear. I don't know why people wear them. I have no idea why people can't see the inherent danger of them.
I know I can't wear them because I have very slightly webbed toes.
Right.
And so, you know, that bit, that the thong bit that goes between the toes, that presses against the flap of skin.
Yeah.
I must have been a duck in a former life or something, but I've just got slightly webbed toes, so I can't wear them, too painful. But I saw somebody on an escalator once get a flip-flop stuck down the side.
Oh, I can believe it.
And with their foot still, it could have ended up losing a leg.
Yeah, I agree.
And also driving, people drive in flip-flops, and that is completely crazy because you can get it stuck under the pedals.
Yeah.
If your foot's on the accelerator and you get a flip-flop stuck under there, you know, that is a crash.
Yeah, and in a crowded place, so, you know, out in Spain or something like that, and you're moving through the streets and all this kind of stuff, you know, and trying to find a table outside a restaurant, you can step on the back of somebody else's flip-flop and break their ankle. It's happened many times. You know, people suddenly find their foot can't move. They either break their leg or they break their ankle because their body goes forward, but their foot is stationary because somebody's standing on their flip-flop. I mean...
Exactly. I've always said that in crowded places, people's feet need to be encased.
Yeah.
So in very lightweight trainers, if it's very hot weather, with socks, so that you can't slip around. And it's not necessarily much hotter than wearing sandals.
No.
But when there's a lot of people around, they're all going to stamp on your feet.
Yeah.
And there's every potential accident waiting to happen.
I agree. I was working on a TV show with the guy who's the guitarist in The Vapes, James somebody. Really nice guy. Can you remember his name?
Yeah. No, I can't.
No, he's a singer and guitarist in The Vapes. And apparently The Vapes are a very popular band, okay, amongst young people, yeah? And we're doing the show together, and we started on flip-flops, and he dismissed it entirely, you know, and said, well, you know, why are we talking about flip-flops? Who cares about flip-flops? And then we put it out to the callers, and story after story came in of the things I've just told you about, people breaking their legs, people breaking their ankles, you know, people finding that their flip-flops had suddenly burst into flames because they'd stood on some hot tar on the road or something like that. But anyway, look, that's another story. What did you feel when you heard that Donald Trump's first wife, Ivana Trump, had died? Did it resonate with you?
Oh, yeah, it did, because I did a couple of interviews with her at the Plaza, which, of course, the Trumps owned.
Right.
Plaza Hotel in New York, and she treated us royally when we were out there as a team from U Magazine, and she was wonderful, absolutely loved her, and she looked after us very well, and I remember there was a headline to a piece that I wrote in U Magazine, and it was "Check out that face,"
right,
as in Czech.
Oh, I see, yes,
her nationality, which she absolutely loved, and she had this, she'd perfected this new hairdo just before we went out there, where she swirled her sort of mass of beautiful blonde hair up on the back of her head and then secured it with just one hairpin.
Right.
And it was that sort of slightly undone look, you know. It really suited her. I liked her a lot. I thought she was very stylish when she was at a do one day and this very beautiful younger woman came over to her and stood in her face and said, "I'm Marla Maples, and I'm in love with your husband.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?" And Ivana just said, "Get lost."
Yeah, yeah.
But unfortunately, she didn't get lost, and he did divorce her and married Marla. That didn't last
long. No, it didn't. I was around in New York in those days. That was the 80s and 90s, and Marla Maples was starring on Broadway. And somebody took Donald Trump to the show, and it was literally one of those, "I'm going to marry that woman," you know what I mean? He seemed to have forgotten at the time he was actually married and had three children with Ivanka, you know. But,
well, don't they always?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I've never been in that situation. But you're absolutely right. We used to see her at the Plaza because Donald Trump wasn't president in those days, but he was a massive self-publicist. He has been all his life. And he was building towers all over New York, you know, Trump Tower South, Trump Tower North.
I stayed in Trump Tower, you know.
Right,
I lived in there for a bit because, what's her name? LaToya Jackson, Michael Jackson's sister, was... Either she was renting or they were lending her a flat in there at one time.
Yeah.
And she'd broken up from her husband, who was this terrible crook called Jack Gordon. He's dead now.
Yeah.
And she had nowhere to go and she was there. And I was a bit friendly with them at the time. Mm. And I remember staying with her, pinching myself, thinking, What am I doing in New York staying in the Trump Tower?
Brilliant. No, well done. So we used to say, is it the Oak Room, the bar in the plot?
Yes, where I had my handbag nicked in there.
Oh, blimey.
I know. It all happens in New York, you know.
It all happens in New York, yeah. And so we used to see a lot of her. And you're absolutely right. She was always very gracious and all that kind of stuff, you know. But what I thought was amazing, and it looks like she might have had a heart attack and fallen down the stairs, right? Or for some reason she fell down the stairs. I don't think they've had the inquest yet. But Donald Trump's, who now you have to call President Trump, because once you've been president of the United States, you are president for life. I mean, his tributes to her were, it's almost like he wished he'd never left her. And that happens a lot with men who suddenly look back and think, I might have been better off with that wife. For instance, if Boris Johnson was still with the Lady Marina, who was mother to, I think, three of his seven children.
Four of his seven children,
that's right, yeah. If he was still with her, I believe Boris Johnson would still be Prime Minister. I believe that she would have been such a stabilising factor on him. She'd have made sure that the office of number 10 Downing Street was run properly and not chaotically, which has led to all his problems. And I got that feeling. I kind of got that feeling from Donald Trump. He spoke about Ivanka so warmly and so, you know, gratifyingly. What a wonderful woman and all that kind of stuff. You think, I wonder whether he thinks now, had she been alongside me during my presidential years, it might have even got better for me.
I do think that men who detonate families, when they grow older, they look back with great regret.
Yes.
And think, I destroyed all those lives, all that fallout, my poor kids. Yeah. I should have stayed with her. She was good for me.
Yeah.
But they have an eye for the buxom blonde and off they go. Mm.
Yeah, well, you could be right. I think I've said in a previous podcast, but some time ago, mate of mine, you know, he got married and had three children, and then he found somebody else, went off with the other lady, and then that bust up. So he went back to his first wife. God knows why she took him back. But 3 months later, he contracted cancer of the stomach and he died. But his dying breath was all about how much he regretted, you know, having smashed it all up, which is a bit sort of poignant, really. But anyway, there.
Oh, do you know what, as well? That thing about falling downstairs. I knew three people who fell down the stairs and died. So in my ex-husband's family, his aunt, her husband, Alan, fell down the stairs. He did like a drink. Gotta say, but he fell down the stairs, top to bottom, killed outright.
Yeah.
My former literary agent, Giles Gordon, he was on his second marriage. He had all these little children. They were having a Halloween party in the house, best house in Edinburgh. They lived in, and he tripped over a toy at the top of the stairs. Boom, 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 down the stairs, landed on his head, dead. My mum's neighbour, where she lives now, guy across the road, he fell down the stairs and killed himself as well. It's very common. And older people just need to be careful. Hold on to the handrail. Yeah. Take it one step at a time.
Yeah.
And don't underestimate the danger of a staircase.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I read something just a couple of days ago. It's just sparked this in my mind. And this is a male author or newspaper man or something who said, the best advice I ever got from anybody was that once you get to 60, always hold on to the handrail going up or down the stairs. And he said, I've done that ever since. He's 70 now, you know. And and I must admit, it's something that I sometimes think of. My problem is I'm a germ-phobic and I don't like putting my hand on the handrail on stairs because I know loads of other people have.
Yeah, but you touch all kinds of things that other people have touched.
Yeah.
You know, when you get on a tube or a train or anything like that. So you just have to carry on carrying your hand sanitizer.
Yeah, well, I do, actually.
And your wipes and your tissues and all the things that you've always carried.
Yeah.
If you hang on to the pole, as it were, in the tube, in the underground, a million other people have touched that that week.
No,
you know, you have to train yourself to hold on when you're going up and downstairs.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you're right. Now, Miss Jones, I know you're not a big television viewer, but years ago in your role as showbiz writer extraordinaire, did you ever get involved with Neighbours, with Kylie or with Jason?
I did several interviews. I never watched Neighbours, really, but I did several interviews with both Kylie and Jason Donovan.
Yeah.
Charming, charming people. They, of course, were made into pop superstars by the Stock Aitken Waterman factory.
Yes, that's right, I mean, so was Kylie Minogue then just a young actress in Australia in Neighbours and somebody spotted her and thought, we'll turn her into a pop star?
Well, it was more or less that, although she and Jason Donovan had been acting since they were children in various things. I think they'd met in some show or other when they were about 11.
Right.
But it was the Neighbours storyline bringing them together as Scott and Charlene. And then they had, there was this phenomenon of their marriage when they got married on screen. And I think however many millions of people watched it, but hugely popular. So it was cashing in on that popularity that Pete Waterman did. And got them both recording. They were both recording cover versions in the beginning.
Yeah.
I think Kylie did the Locomotion, if you remember.
Yes, I do.
Oh, and they had a few hits together. Yeah. They had the Christmas number one in 1988 that was especially for you. I'm sure you remember that
one.
And then Jason got picked up as a musical theatre star. Mm. And he did Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. He did Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
War of the Worlds, all of that.
Yeah.
And then he made a fantastic comeback quite recently doing Joseph again for the Queen's Platy Jews, as it were. So, but now they're bringing them back together for the end of Neighbours,
I think. Well, this is why I raised it with you. Apparently the last edition, the last ever edition of Neighbours after, God knows, 25, 30 years is in a couple of weeks' time. And then it's all over. I should be so lucky, 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 lucky. I take it that stock Aitken and Waterman wrote that for, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, yeah. I think, I mean, look, they both had their difficulties, Kylie and Donovan. He became a drug addict.
Right.
She had breast cancer.
Oh,
they've overcome a lot to get where they are, and good for them, you know, they turn themselves around.
And also, I think Kylie's sister was the sibling who cashed in the greatest of all time on her sister's success, didn't she?
Danny Minogue. Yeah. Well, I think that's probably slightly unfair because both sisters were doing it all when they were children. They were performing kids, But she was in, there was a musical, I can't remember what it was called, on stage in the West End in London. And it was about the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh.
And she played Esmeralda in that. I remember seeing it.
No, the
music wasn't that great and it didn't last very long.
Yeah.
The songs weren't brilliant, you know, nothing memorable. I can't remember what it was called, maybe Hunchback or something like that.
I've never
But she wasn't the Hunchback.
I never saw an episode of Neighbours. I mean, not because I thought it was dross or anything. I just never watched it. It was on at like, you know, 6 in the evening. I was never at home and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I used to keep in touch with it by reading all the scandal stories in the papers. But anyway,
I'm not into soaps. I never got into soaps.
No, I agree. Now, I want to say a word of praise for Kevin Spacey, okay?
Why?
Well, look, it's all sub judice, but he's been accused of some very serious crimes, 5 alleged sex assaults against men. And he was in America when the charges were issued. Now, he flew from America to here and turned up at the Old Bailey with hundreds, if not thousands, of people like us, you know, with cameras in their hands. And, you know, it was a massive media event and stood up in, you know, court number one, one of the most famous courts in the world. And in a very clear voice, pleaded not guilty to the charges laid against him. Now, I have no idea whether Kevin Spacey is guilty or innocent of the charges laid against him. And I don't wish to dwell on that. But I do think, for him to have been as bold as to say, I want to clear my name, I'm going to fly to London, I'm going to stand up in the court in the Old Bailey, I'm going to plead not guilty. If you contrast that with Prince Andrew, the Duke of York, who had a similar situation in reverse and was asked to go to America to talk to the FBI, i.e. fly across the Atlantic in the other direction, and who patently did everything he could to possibly avoid that, I think that's a contrast which is enormous, between two men who both said, I'm innocent, I want to clear my name, and the way they both handled their situations.
I think you're barking up the wrong tree here.
Right.
Don't forget that an official charge has been brought against Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
So he had no choice but to come here and stand up in court and answer the charge. No charge was brought against Prince Andrew, not in any court anywhere in the world.
You're absolutely right.
So he can't be extradited.
No, but he was asked to go and talk to the FBI in America, wasn't he?
Yeah, but that was an invitation. That wasn't a requirement.
Yeah.
And no charge has been brought against him.
Yeah.
Whereas in Kevin Spacey's case, we have a court hearing pending for June 2023. So had he declined to come, he could have been forced to come.
Well, maybe, but what I'm saying is he's a very wealthy man, he's got great influence. Other people, I believe, would have tried to wriggle around it with all sorts of very expensive high-class lawyers and find all sorts of ways not to, proceed and all that. So I quite admire him.
No, he had to come. He honestly had to come. The same as when Amber Heard, when Johnny Depp launched his defamation suit against the Sun newspaper in London, they called Amber Heard as a witness, and you have no choice. I've been in that situation, by the way, and I know, because when I was called to give evidence in a case that Jason Connery brought against the Sun, Tom Crone, who you'll remember.
Yeah, and Tom, the lawyer for News International.
He wrote to me, and I was required to attend court to give evidence on behalf of the Sun, and I said, I don't want to do that. And he wrote to me again and said, you don't understand. You have to. You are required to be present. And I had no choice. Amber Heard would rather have not come to London and gone through that horrible, horrible case and all the information that came out about their private life. But she had no choice. She was called by the court.
Amazing. Okay, well, thanks for clearing that up, Miss Jones. Look, finally, I want to talk to you about Mark Phillips. Jane Moore, a colleague of mine at one time, maybe of yours, writes a column now in the Sun each day. She referred to a story she was sent out to cover when she was a young reporter. She was sent to New Zealand amidst rumours that Mark Phillips, who was still then the husband of Princess Anne, had fathered a love child with some equestrian woman in New Zealand, you know?
No, it was an art teacher. I remember this. It was an art teacher called Heather Tonkin. And the daughter was Felicity. And she'd be 37 now because she was born in 85.
Golly, amazing. Anyway, I was the news editor of The Express at the time, and I got wind of the story as well. I didn't know anybody else was onto it, but I sent a guy called Norman Luck to New Zealand, okay? And Norm was a brilliant reporter. I mean, one of the old school, you know what I mean? Fact checker, a guy who was, you know, absolutely fastidious in the way he went about his job. He had lots of problems, Norman, mostly with women. He was always trying to, tap off, for want of a better word, with any good-looking girl in Fleet Street.
Oh, a bit of a shagger. Okay.
A bit of a shagger, old Norm, but nevertheless, you know, he...
Family show.
Your family show, and he's very good at his job. But I sent Norm down there, and Norm actually found the love child. He did it through...
Just kicking around the street, wasn't it? Christchurch or somewhere.
He went through forensic, you know, detailed exploratory inquiries into birth certificates and times and places and all that. And we found her. Whereas Jay Moore said in the story she related that she went there, couldn't find, and came home. Well, about a month later, we found her on the Express. So I'm not for one moment putting Ms. Moore down, who's had a brilliant journalistic career. It's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes with those stories. Perhaps we went a month later, we were lucky that, you know, more stuff had come to light. But anyway.
Not everything goes your way as a journalist, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Luck of the draw.
It is the luck of the draw. Miss Jones, what do you think about bison being released in Kent? If you went round the corner for your house and you were heading for the beach and suddenly there's a bison standing in the way, you wouldn't like that, would you?
A bison is what you wash your face in.
A bison, wash your face in. I like that. That's very clever, Miss Jones. Well done. But you do know they're reintroducing bison.
Yeah, of course. I think it's all this rewilding trend, isn't it? And it's supposed to be good for the soil. Putting carbon back into the soil and all the rest of it. It's a bit extreme, isn't it? I mean, bringing them from Germany, I'm not sure. Imagine what it cost to fly those bison in. On a flight, I'm sure we could have got some other kind of Highland cattle or something and shipped some of those down.
I agree. But anyway, there we go. Right, okay, folks, that's it for another week. Thank you very much indeed. We must retire now because, like we have told you already, it is the hottest day of the year as you're listening to this podcast. So I would say to them all, Miss Jones, please stay cool. And stay hydrated. That's the main thing. And we'll be back with you again this time next week. When we got to about 15 or 16, so that's like a generation before your time, somebody discovered this very exotic sun cream when we all started going to Mallorca and Spain. I forgot what it's called now, but it was, you know, it was in a beautiful plastic bottle, yellow and brown, and if you didn't have one of these, you weren't on the inside. And that was the first time I ever remember sun cream. And
was that Amber Soler?
Very much indeed, Miss Jones. It certainly was. And the adverts used to show people on the beach, Amber Soler, looking like sort of teak coloured, you know what I mean? It was the thing that, you know, this safely makes you brown, you know what I mean? All that kind of.
Oh, do you remember George Hamilton with the mahogany tan?
Yes, I do,
as well?
Yes, yes.
A tan was a kind of status symbol in those days.
Yeah, it was. Look,
look, I don't have to work. I can lie in my garden or on the beach all day and look like this. Yeah. Or I've been to Ibiza or the south of France or somewhere else equally exotic, Mexico.
Exactly.
But nowadays, I would say, isn't there an element of cultural appropriation to trying to darken one's skin?
Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right, yeah. He had lots of problems, Norman, mostly with women. He was always trying to, tap off, for want of a better word, with any good-looking girl in Fleet Street.
Oh, a bit of a shagger. Okay.
A bit of a shagger, old Norm, yeah. But nevertheless, you know, he...
Family show.
Your family show, and he's very good at his job.
I dress in mismatched garments and statement shoes, and I waft around saying absolutely pointless things so as not to challenge anybody.
Yeah, golly, that's brilliant. That was a brilliant impersonation, Miss Jones. Well done. You've got a new career.
Thank you.
New career ahead of you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ever notice your dog slowing down and having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Rough Greens to your dog's food for 90 days and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Rough Greens here, and I invite you to give your pup the Rough Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your dog will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch your dog a free Jumpstart trial bag today. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. That's TRYRUFF. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Just add a scoop of Rough Greens. Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's TRYMEOW. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.